Hi there, listener. I am coming to you today on a Thursday, a little out of sorts. It's been a wild day, so I thought I'd record kind of in the afternoon instead of at night, because if I record at night, I might be lazy and just tell myself I'm taking a personal health day. But I got up today to do some work, and today's Thursday when I'm recording, which is the day my mom goes for chemo every week. And she is at chemo. It's maybe 10 o'clock, and she texts me and she's like, "Hey, I hate to bother you, but I'm here at the cancer center. Your sister dropped me off and I need my headphones. I got some bad news and I just need to drown everything out." Now, she doesn't see it this way, but if it was your parent or loved one who texted you from the cancer center, where they get tested weekly about, you know, their levels, how healthy they are, how they're doing, and they're monitored by their doctors and nurses and staff, and your loved one texted you and said, "I got bad news," that would be bad for your brain, right? Because she was like, "Oh, I didn't mean it like that. I wouldn't tell you something terrible over the phone. However, I found out she had cancer because she FaceTimed me to tell me, already crying." So we all cried. Anyway, so I go to take my boyfriend to work, because I take him to work every morning, and I just remembered that she had gotten a new iPhone, so she doesn't have the auxiliary port anymore. Like, I haven't had one for a while. So I didn't even think about it. I grab earphones and then I'm like, "Well, shit, they're not going to plug in." And she can't use my AirPods because they don't really work anymore. And I tried to get out of the car with it just in drive. And I open the door and start to climb out, and the car's moving. And my boyfriend, who can't drive and can't reach the pedals anyways, freaking out. Anyway, spend a hot half an hour to 45 minutes in traffic getting him to work and then getting back downtown to the hospital, get there. And my mom's crying, and I get into the infusion room. They're doing like her pre-meds before they do her chemo. So, you know, like medication to stop the nausea, to stop the anxiety, stuff like that. And she's crying, and I sit down and I'm like, "What is it? What's going on? What's the news? What's happened?" And I'm not laughing because it's not a good situation, but she's doing chemotherapy right now. And she's been on like the strongest course that you can get, just because her type of cancer was kind of strange and they don't deal with it very often. So they gave her this chemo that apparently you can only do four treatments throughout your entire life. And they gave her all four at once. And then they're doing another longer round of chemo that's less intense. So, and I think the first round was so intense, which is why all her hair came out. But this new round, she's kind of growing back like some peach fuzz, so I'm hopeful. And then after, I think, a 12-week course of this second chemo, she has to wait about a month to gain some strength, and then she's going to have surgery where the doctor's going to kind of poke around in the area where they found the only mass. It was pretty small, I think, compared to what some people have. And they're going to poke around, see if there's any more cancerous cells, do stuff like that. And then this is the part where it comes in today. She was under the impression that after that, she was going to be doing radiation therapy, which truthfully is the part I'm the most frightened of, the most upset about, because I know that instead of it just taking her hair and her not feeling very well, it's going to burn her. And that's really hard. And obviously it's way harder for her. It's just hard to see someone that you love go through that or preparing to go through that. But she's sitting there crying, and I say, "What's wrong? Did they find something else? Is your treatment not working? What's going on?" And she was talking to her doctor today, and she was telling her how excited she was that after this, she would be having surgery, which she was fine with. And then she was only going to have treatment once a week for radiation, you know, have radiation once a week for 6 weeks, and then she was going to be free. You know, and she'll have to do regular checkups, monitoring, make sure everything's good. Possibly she'll have to take chemo pills, apparently they make those after her radiation, but her doctor told her today that it's not chemo, or it's not radiation once a week for 6 weeks. It's radiation every day for 6 weeks. And I wasn't there, and she was obviously a little confused, and I think she may have heard that and just zoned out. So maybe there's other options, or maybe it's not, you know, 5 to 7 days a week. Maybe it's two or three, you know, one day on, one day off. I don't know. No one in our family really has a history of cancer other than like skin cancer, just kind of the safest form of skin cancer that you can get if there is one. So we don't really know what to do about it. We don't really know how we're supposed to deal with it, and we didn't realize that it would be so intense, and so she was obviously really upset about that. But it was kind of odd, because when she told me, I laughed, and she was like, it's not funny. She's crying, and I said, I know it's not funny, but I was imagining, you know, I was going to come in here, and you were going to tell me that, you know, they found something else, that something else had sprung up, you know, that I was going to lose you, all of you. It wasn't going to be a recovery. It was going to be downhill. So I was relieved to find out that my mom has to do, I guess, 5 days a week radiation therapy for 6 weeks, because it means I get to keep my mom, and it means she gets to stay alive. So I'm a little out of sorts today. I'm trying to get through it, which is why I'm recording right now as kind of a form of therapy, but it definitely threw me for a loop. And I don't really talk to anyone about stuff like this. Usually I don't talk to anyone but my parents and my sister and my boyfriend, but I don't know. I just feel the need to get it off my chest. It's weird to be so relieved about something like that, but it makes sense. I don't know. It's really hard, and it's not nearly as hard for me as it is for my sister and my dad, and of course my mom, Jesus Christ. But I mean, kind of dealing with it other than in their bodies, because I live 100 miles away from them. I moved away to get out of a small town, to get away from all of that. And everything was fine up until now. And now I feel guilty every single day that I am not there, that I'm not, I just feel guilty that I'm not there to help her or help my parent, my dad or my sister, because the lion's share of it falls to them. It falls to them to get her up here to the city that I live in, not because she wanted to be close to me specifically, but because this is where the I guess it's the best cancer center in the state is, and it's close to me. But they do so much, and it's hard for me just to know that there's more I could, you know, I could abandon my life here and go take care of her and kind of be her full-time caretaker. But if I did that, she would never forgive me, because she's happy that I have my own life. But it's also hard that my sister has to give up her life to do it, because she didn't move away. She still lives there. And of course my dad, I mean, no one deserves to watch the person they love go through that. Anyway, enough of that, enough being sad, enough depression. It's already been 10 minutes that I've been talking about myself, and you probably don't know me. I don't think anyone listening knows me. And I think I have another listener, maybe. I don't know. There was a spike in the listens yesterday. I crossed 100, which is exciting. It's kind of sad when you think that there's like 30-something episodes, but I'm excited about it. It doesn't really matter how many people. But I appreciate whoever it is that's out there listening. I don't think it was me this time on accident. I don't think so, at least. I appreciate it. It is nice to have someone to talk to, even if you can't talk back. But today, I decided that I was going to read another piece of fiction that I wrote for that same class, it was a whole portfolio we had to submit at the end of the semester of poems, short stories, a play, and I believe an excerpt of a longer work that we planned on writing, which I just ripped off. We just call it Love and submitted it. But this is a short story. It's not a play, so hopefully it's a little less confusing. And when I wrote it, I guess I can get personal. It doesn't really matter. I had recently been in a really dark place, and oh my God, it's hard to say. I had attempted suicide unsuccessfully because I am not really that good at anything. And I didn't do it the way I was supposed to. I just lost my footing for a minute. And then I wrote this story. I guess afterwards, once you've heard it, we'll talk about why I wrote what I wrote and who is in it and who is who, if that makes sense. But I guess for now, enjoy A Mad Boy's Love Song. Mad Boy's Love Song. The night I decided to leave, the stars seemed to have winked out of existence simultaneously, almost as if they'd all talked about it. All that was left in the sky was a shadow of moon, vaguely circular and iridescent, shimmering from the heavens. I glanced down at my phone on the bedside table. It was 2 a.m, and I took the bleak, eerie night as a sign. I'd decided to leave before, made every attempt and failed, but as I pulled out the letters to my parents, I knew this was the night. The sky said so. I crept down the stairs, pulled my jacket on, and shoved my feet into my boots. I held the letters, these scrawled notes, to the two dearest people in my life. I trembled. It wasn't something I could control. The excitement was building in me, and yet I was terrified of leaving. I considered slipping out of my boots and jacket and heading back upstairs, but I fought all the reasons I should stay and arrange the letters on the coffee table before closing the door behind me. The night air tastes like icy water, swirling in my lungs and chilling me to the bone. It was somewhere between exhilarating and petrifying, like the moment before jumping into a pool for the first time every summer. I feel so alive here, teetering between the known and the unknown. My car flashes and I walk towards it. I slip into the bucket seats and catch a glimpse of myself in the rearview mirror. My eyes are glowing a strange glacial blue like I'd never seen. I smile and grab my phone to check the time. When the screen lights up, I pause for a moment. Adam and I smile from the screen, our arms wrapped around each other. We're grinning. His piercing hazel eyes are a momentary reprieve from what I'm about to do. The picture captures him perfectly. His raven hair is ruffled in the wind, and his hazel eyes shine as he laughs. I'm caught in a rare moment of joy. His hand is wrapped in mine. All I could feel in that moment was my love for him. I know he deserves a goodbye. I'm sorry, Adam, I have to leave tonight, I text him, hitting send before I can convince myself to delete it, walk back upstairs, and sleep until the sun crowds the invisible stars to the other side of the world. I turn the car key, shift into gear, and swing out of the driveway in one practiced movement, ready to escape. The drive is silent, and all I can concentrate on is the hum of my sports wagon as I climb the mountain's steep slope. The sky is close and welcoming here, where some stars have penetrated the fog. Darker thoughts flood through me, telling me this escape is all I've got. These are the thoughts I know really well, the ones that tell me that Adam could care less, the ones in the back of my mind always telling me to leave. These thoughts are inescapable. Leaving tonight guarantees that they'll soon be silent. At a derelict sign that reads, Plath's Point, I pull my car onto the shoulder, turn off the engine, and sit facing the way out. I glance at my phone one last time because some weak cry tells me someone will try to stop me, someone will care, but I know I have no signal and it doesn't matter. The only person I told was Adam, and as much as I wish he would swoop in and save me, I know he's probably asleep. My head is swirling with the voices now, and they all want me to leave, and I want to do what they say, if only to shut them up. Before I'm fully aware, I'm standing at the edge. The ocean crashes into the cliff face about 100 feet below me, and with every meat of waving on rock, I can feel pure energy surge into the soles of my feet. I can smell the salt in the air, and it's sort of romantic in a way I wish I could explain to you now. I'm a step closer. The toe of my boot is dangling in the air. I heave a deep sigh, pushing my chest out, and whisper my last goodbyes to my parents and Adam. As I feel my world begin to tilt, I hear a roaring on the road. It's familiar, and when I turn, a headlight flashes over me, and I know who it is. "What are you doing here?" I shout into the light. "You think I wouldn't find you? You've always been a poetic asshole," Adam says, stepping in front of his motorcycle's headlight and jerking a thumb at the sign. I can only manage a small, wavering smile that falters after a split second. "I didn't send you that message so you would come out here," I yell, not because he couldn't hear me, but because I couldn't face the realization that maybe that was exactly why I sent it. "You think I don't know that? Didn't mean I wasn't going to try like hell to get you out of here," he says, stepping closer. But he isn't going to stop me. This is what I want, but at least now I can say goodbye in person. I guess he deserves that much. I move towards him and wrap his thin body up in my arms, breathing in the earthy scent of his hair, savoring these last memories and memorizing what it felt like to have him in my arms. His head sinks to my chest and I breathe in deeply, the cold air chapping my skin. But the voices are still in me, angry that I haven't given in, and so I pull back. I put him at arm's length and turn back to the cliff, teetering as the air rushes up past me from the waves. "Hey!" he shouts, his thin fingers wrapping around my forearm as if he could hope to counter me. I had 30 pounds on him at least. "Adam, I have to leave. I can't stand it anymore. I can't stand these thoughts, these feelings in me. They choke me. I feel like I can't breathe. And for what? I'm angry. I'm ready to do this. This isn't worth it," I say. "Really? And you think the solution is to leap off the nearest dead poet's namesake?" he asks. "Don't act like you get it. I want this. I need my thoughts to be quiet," I explain. "I have to scream it to keep from convincing myself of the truth." "So this is it. You're going to leave your family and your friends? You're going to leave me behind?" he asks with a cracking voice and a faced car from the most beautiful melancholy marble. "Please let me go. I have no other option. My body, my mind, everything I am is tarnished by these thoughts in my head, and I can't polish them away," I tell him. "And who says you have to shine, Rob?" At the sound of my name on his lips, a sob bubbles from somewhere deep inside, and I fall away from the cliff to the ground at his feet. "I do, even though it's useless to try," I murmur, still wishing to plummet into the ocean and silence these voices. "You do shine, Rob. Every time you smile or laugh at a stupid joke or tell me you love me, you shine so brightly that I worry I'm going to be the blind one," he tells me, and I shudder. "Adam, let me go," I try to say firmly as I look back at the ocean waves, but it comes out as a whisper. "No, you have to stay. Ignore the voices and listen to me. I'm what's real, not them." His voice shivers in the night air, and I look up at him. He stoops down to my level on the cliff's edge, and I let my tears fall. I sink into his arms and cry while the voices are quiet and obeying his demand for silence. Somehow he managed to save me. This beautiful boy I love shows up in the nick of time. He managed to pull me back from the brink, literally. I wish I could explain how it feels to have a person love you so much, to know you so well that they know exactly what you're going to do with just a few words. I also wish I could explain what it's like to feel like your chest is collapsing from some whisper in the back of your mind. I wish I could explain to you why someone would drive themselves to the edge of a cliff and wish to jump into the void to shut the voice in their head down. Lying there next to the cliff, I was thankful and angry at the same time. Adam had stopped me. He kept me from leaving him alone in the world, but at the same time, I lost the perfect chance to leave everything behind. That was what I wanted. And the moment Adam dropped me off at home or left my side, the feelings would return. They're constant, they're life-shattering, and at the cliff's edge, I knew I'd be back. The voices never stayed silent for long. Well, friends, that's my short story. Reading it back now is, is an exercise in, I guess, respect for myself. I don't know. It's kind of hard because even though the wording is flowery and it's obviously written to be read dramatically, and I am experimenting with adding sound to the back of my stories, it is how I felt. But, and this might sound shitty to say, but it doesn't really matter. The character Adam, this character in this little short 10-page story, wasn't real. My boyfriend didn't pull me back from the brink. No one pulled me back from the brink. I jumped, you know? I guess I didn't jump hard enough. I don't know. But that's really why I wrote it, was I was begging for someone to pull me back, even though really in my head I was only asking myself for help. I wasn't asking anyone else. I wasn't telling anyone else. And people knew what it was like to be in my brain, but it's not like they could monitor it 24/7. So I don't blame any. I'm not mad at anyone about it. Honestly, I don't know. It taught me something, but it's also not something I would recommend you try. But that's why I wrote it. I wrote it because at times it was like there were, and there still are, but it's like these creeping little tendrils at the back of your head, and all they tell you is to just shut it down, just let go, give up. And it's hard. It's hard now. I wouldn't say I'm in a better place mentally, but I just have realized what I would be doing to everyone that I left behind. Not that that's a good reason, but it's the reason I've got. How awful it would be to leave behind my family, my boyfriend, my friends that all care about me, and even if I feel worthless, and I don't know, even if I myself feel that I am worthless and that there's nothing about me that matters, which is truthfully how I do feel a lot of the time, and not like I need you to feel sorry for me way, just that's honestly how I feel. I don't see my value. I don't see a value in myself, because I don't really think there is one. I don't think there's anything about me that requires me to be around, if that makes sense. But I know what it would do to my best friend, what it would do to my boyfriend, what it would do to my mom and my dad and my sister. It would turn their world upside down, and I can't do that to them. So I guess it's kind of appropriate that I don't know if it's serendipity, I don't know what it is, but it's kind of appropriate that I read this today. Not because I'm feeling particularly suicidal today. I think I've been handling my stress and what's been going on with my family pretty well, but it's good to remind myself to keep fighting. And it's good to remind myself that everyone else is still fighting for me, for those people in their life that they could never do this to. And that is not me saying that people who do complete suicide are not thinking of others. I completely understand why it happens. But for those of us that are still around, and for whatever reason, whether you've never felt that way or whether you have and suicide didn't happen for you, or you think about it every day like I do, there's always a reason to keep going. Even if there's no one that you feel like in your life cares about you, there's no one that you think would miss you, or, and this is what my brain tells me a lot, that if I killed myself, if I never existed, is more how I usually try to rationalize it. If I had never existed, everyone I have come in contact with would be better off. And while I do believe that, in all honesty, I think I'm kind of the worst I can't do that now. People care about me. Whatever their reasons are for caring about me and wanting me around are not my reasons to know, but they do. And that's why I don't try it again. You know? I don't know. I've gotten texts since I've started recording that it's time to go pick my boyfriend up. So I'll leave you here today. Sorry for probably bumming you out, but that's it. That's the last of the sad stories that I have to tell. I don't know if I'm going to pick up season 2 next week, but if I don't, then it'll be another Tuesday, Thursday week, and then for sure by the week after next, we'll be into season 2. I'm pretty excited about that, and I think it'll be a little bit more upbeat with some funner background sounds that aren't piano the whole time and like melancholic piano. But anyway, sorry for the bummy episode. Sorry that if you're just listening to this one for the first time that you had to tune into it, but I appreciate you listening no matter what. And I guess until next time, thank you.